Hello and welcome to the first episode of another Manchester City podcast. I'm your host, Adam Merritt, and from here I'm looking to discuss all topics Manchester City from my point of view. And in time I'm hoping to get some more guests and grow the podcast, but here's the first episode, so it's all baby steps from here, and off we go. First of all, an introduction to myself. I'm a writer for esteemedcompany.com. I've been covering Manchester City for the past two seasons. Since the first week that I started was the week of the Champions League final against Inter Milan, where we claimed the treble. From there, I've covered the club through all of last season, this season, and all the summer transfer windows, the break, so to speak. If you call what players get nowadays a break in between, and my coverage varies from transfer stories, tactical stories, game analysis, player analysis, and everything in between. This podcast is me looking to expand from writing into the sphere of podcasting, covering Manchester City. So that's a brief introduction to the podcast and myself. And we'll get into the topics from at hand from here. First of all, the biggest topic surrounding Manchester City this week is the six-game winless run. Obviously, five of those games defeats until the 3-3 draw against Feyenoord on Tuesday evening. For me, the six-game winless run is all... There's issues throughout it that have affected each game City have played. Whether it started at Tottenham Carabao Cup, fourth round Carabao Cup tour, all was seen in our late collapse against Feyenoord on Tuesday evening in those disastrous final 15 minutes. There's the sameness to the issues we're seeing. Defensively, we aren't anywhere near it at the moment. Whether it's the tactics employed by Pep Guardiola at the minute in relation to the fitness of the players or the players that are available. It's been prevalent throughout the six games. There's no other way to put it. Nobody to criticise Guardiola in any way, shape or form, especially considering what he's done for our club. But you've just got to look at what you're seeing. So in the Carabao Cup tie, the 2-1 defeat the Spurs. Yes, we fought hard with a depleted squad. Not a depleted squad, a weaker starting lineup, starting 11. And the substitutions weren't made to win the game necessarily. They were more made in that the first game of the sixth game in this run to preserve players for what lie ahead. But there was a theme, Spurs got behind our defence very relatively easily, more than relatively, they did very easily, just balls over the top. Got our opponents in behind, you can say, from that tie, the Brighton, Bournemouth, Sporting, Spurs in the 4-0 defeat, and even the final game. It's a common thing. It's there. Anyone who's watching City games can see it. And, yeah, that's one of the issues that's caused it. It's not all of them. There are others that flow into that. But that's the first one. Is that defensively, our line's too high. While it's been a successful tactic in the past, as it stands with the fitness and form of our current players, it's not suiting what we have. So that's one part of the six-game winless run that you can just see watching City games. With my job, I watch our game two or three to four viewings of our games, depending on what I'm looking for, and it stands out across all six that we've... The five losses and the draw against final. You can just see it. It's staring at you in the face. The defensive issues flow into the midfield issues. The two are linked. which also links to a third issue, which is our press. I'll cover that shortly. In our midfield, where we look old. There's no other way to put it. Rodri's ACL injury is obviously cost us the best player in world football, in my opinion, because that's what Rodri is. The Ballon d'Or speaks for itself. As much as Real Madrid want to complain about it, they're the facts of the matter, and they can debate that on another day, but they'll do that. That's what they do. But back to the point at hand, losing Rodri is a huge blow. His technical and tactical nous and ability is second to none as a midfielder in the world game. People can name names who are as good or they believe is good, but there is no one as good. Losing him is a massive blow, especially with the way our midfield functions. He's the heart and soul of our midfield, and him sitting where he sits and playing how he plays, what he does flows into allowing Foden, De Bruyne, Bernardo Silva, et cetera, to do what they do. You take one cog out of a machine, one cog fails in a machine, they all fail. Our factors of life, that's how things work. That's one part of the midfield issue, but there's no point dwelling on it because Rodri isn't coming back this season unless, barring some miracle of human recovery from ACL injuries and whatnot. Rodri's big factor in why we look the way we look at Manchester City, but he's not coming back this season, so I'm not going to spend my whole time dwelling on his loss because it is what it is, and that's about all you can say on it. But the loss that amplifies Rodri's loss is the loss of Mateo Kovacic for a month. For me, Kovacic has probably been City's player of the season so far, outside of Erling Haaland, depending on how you judge Erling Haaland. If you read X or Twitter or whatever it calls itself now, Alan is neither here nor there, but that's a different topic, and we'll cover that either later in the podcast or at another time. But losing Kovacic for a month is massive for Pep Guardiola and his team. So far this season, when Rodri was out, people need to bear in mind, Rodri played a game and a half this season. Or not even a half. I think it was 20 minutes in since Arsenal in September when he ruptured his ACL. Kovacic had stepped up and been arguably our best player this season, in my opinion, other than the early signs from Rico Lewis, Haaland's goal-scoring start, and that'd be the three contenders for our player this season. But back on point, Rodri's loss and Kovacic's loss are a massive issue for the world champions. Kovacic was the player we have. We can't buy one until January, and that's a different discussion I'll cover in another podcast, in a separate podcast. City's potential transfer moves in January, Kovacic being out for at least 3 to 4 weeks is a huge blow. That's caused a flow-on effect to make Ilkay Gundogan more important than perhaps he should be at his age. Gundogan is our only reliable number six. I believe there's an argument for Matheus Nunes to step in alongside him, especially given his physical attributes. On top of his skill set, Nunes this season has stolen some doubters. He's playing on the left wing. He's more of a direct midfielder than anything Pep would traditionally play in the heart of midfield. With his ability to run at opponents and his pace, but you take his pace, and the ability to track back, which he has shown at Wolves and Sporting. He does have it. And a midfield pairing of Gundogan and Nunes has merit, in my opinion. That idea has stood out across the six-game winless run for me, especially that Bernardo Silva has had to carry a massive workload through it. For me, Bernardo's our most important player and has been this season, but he's showing signs that either he's A, getting old, or B, more to the point, tired. He's carrying a workload he shouldn't have to carry because we have no other options. There's a flow-on effect to everything in football, especially the City at the minute, and we've been ravaged by injuries at the back, more so in midfield, which is my topic at the minute. And Bernardo's had to carry the bear or carry the weight of it. And the more you watch Bernardo play, you can see the effect it's having on him. So you factor that in the defensive high line, which is not sustainable at the minute with the injury issues, fatigue, and the workload on certain players rather than others. And you're starting to get a picture of where this six-game winless run comes from. But having said all of that, across the winless run, we've had chances to put teams away early in games. The Sporting 4-1 loss, the Brighton 2-1 loss, and even Tottenham, the 4-0 loss to Tottenham, as absurd as it sounds, we should have been at least one up or out of sight by half-time or in the early stages of any of those games. We're not taking our chances as a team. And unfortunately, as unfortunate as it is, it falls on Erling Haaland because he's our only reliable goal scorer as it stands currently. Obviously, in my opinion, and probably many others, Haaland's the best striker in world football. People could tell me Viktor Gyokeres or others are, but Haaland's Haaland. Enough said. But back to the point. Going forward, that's all City seem to have at the minute. If Haaland doesn't score, who does? And you add it all with the weakness of the defensive high line, the midfield issues, the over-reliance on Haaland, you put three factors together, you get a six-game winless run. And I know that media claim we have the strongest squad in world football and with options everywhere. We never have. Pep Guardiola prefers a small squad until injury hit this season. It's never really been a major issue. So there are more tactical issues than that in the six-game winless run. But just looking at it from a basic point of view, you put three factors together, you'll end up with a six-game winless run eventually. As good and great as a manager Guardiola is, he can't overcome that. So that six-game winless run leads into tomorrow's clash with Liverpool at Anfield. So as it stands currently, we head into tomorrow's match against Arne Slot's Liverpool, 8 points behind Liverpool at the top of the table, the start of the weekend. That doesn't factor in. Right. One all draw with Southampton on Friday night. And in terms of their form to ours, they're flying. No other way to put it, and that's just an honest assessment of what you're looking at. So, is there hope for City at Anfield? If you read the media reports and X or Twitter, it's more commonly known, or around the drafts. No, there's not. That's the general assessment, and based on form, it's probably the correct one. But for me, I'd rather be more optimistic. And as a writer, I can't sell a story. As a City fan, if I'm sitting there writing 44 stories this weekend of how we'll lose 6-7, 0, 4-0, or whatever. And as a City fan, I believe we can go to Anfield tomorrow and get a result, and at worst get a point. It'll take an extreme lift from the whole Manchester City squad, but it's not out of the realms of possibility in my eyes. How would City go to Anfield to get a result? First and foremost for me,
you've got to solve the issues between the connection between the defence and the midfield. That sounds simple as a statement and on paper, but making it work is a different thing, different situation in time. When you look at City's defence across the winless run, Kyle Walker's woefully out of form, and that's putting it mildly. You factor that into the loss of Rodri and Ruben Dias, which I think if those two were playing, they could cover. Well, Walker's lack of form, or signs of age, or father time catching City's captain, I think City could have covered it. But as it stands, they can't. But back to the point at hand, can City start Kyle Walker at Anfield? I think he will start, even though I don't think he should. But I think that's more the choice Pep Guardiola has to make on the fact that Akanji's probably not fit enough to start at right back for a full 90 minutes. So then you add Rico Lewis into the equation. And I'm not quite sold on his ability to play, not to play, to play in such a high-pressure environment when he's looking tired himself given his age and the role he's asked to play each and every week as it stands currently. So when you look at our defence going into Anfield, right-back situation is a problem. I expect Kyle Walker to start, but in an ideal world, I think Akanji would start, which moves across to the centre-backs. This week, it looks like Ruben Dias is fit. He's trained all week. The interview he did, that was published today in the City magazine, which you can read courtesy of mancity.com. He said that he's fully fit. He was on the bench against Feyenoord in 3-3 draw. Didn't come on, of course. Threatened. That's part of Pep Guardiola's job, is the squad management of the squad. He probably shouldn't have. But now, a full week of training, you would think and hope Dias would start tomorrow at Anfield. In my opinion, if he does, that's an immediate improvement to City's defence. Because Dias, as I said earlier, is a leader like Rodri. As soon as he's on the pitch, his teammates will walk taller. Now, this is going to depend on his fitness, but everything you can see by what he said in the City magazine or images shared on City.com yesterday, he does appear to be fully fit and ready to go. Whether or not he is, we won't know until the starting lineups are announced. Which leads into the left back and the other centre back that would play alongside Dias if he's fit enough to start tomorrow. Josko Gvardiol, to me, is or will be a world-class player. We all saw his mistakes against Feyenoord Tottenham, which directly led to goals. So he's carrying a heavy workload due to City's injury issues. And he looks fatigued because whenever he plays for Croatia, he starts. That's the way it is at the moment. There's no alternative at left back for Pep Guardiola and City squad. One alternative he does have is Nathan Ake, but as we've seen, he's in the same boat as Manuel Akanji, where he's not quite fit enough to play a full 90. Which, that's a problem in itself, because if you look at the game and where City's issues are defensively outside of the high line, just personnel, if everyone's fully fit, you'd start Akanji, Dias, Guardiol, and Ake across City's defence. That's just my opinion. But we're not sure if Ake or Akanji can play 90 minutes either at centre back or full back as it stands, which leads into Guardiol's problem. He's carrying a massive workload. I wrote earlier this week, for me, there's merit in him starting at centre-back over left-back tomorrow. When we brought him from RB Leipzig, he was, or still is, probably the top young centre-back in world football. He showed at the 2018 World Cup. We all know that and how good he is in the heart of City's defence. But I think there's a valid argument for him to start at centre-back tomorrow. especially if DS is available to start. For me, that would alleviate two issues. One, it would move some pressure off Guardiola in possession. He's just playing centre back, which, of course, is a tough role to play if Guardiola saw them. Two, he's not such a threat or expected to be such a threat going forward. He can just focus on what he has to do, and he's got Ruben Dias alongside him, which flows on to left back with Ake, who has previously played very well against Mo Salah, who has tormented us in the past. I'm not going to go over his stats because every City fan knows what Salah's done to me just to see in seasons past. But Ake, a left back, is a very strong option. He was a left back in the treble, latter stages of the treble winning season. So he's done it before, and he knows what he's doing. I thought Ake was exceptional before he was substituted after 70 minutes against Feyenoord. It was no coincidence to me that that defensive collapse to give up 3 goals in 15 minutes happened with Ake off the pitch. If I could pick the defence, and that is with all players being fully fit, you would go Kanji, Diaz, Guardiola, and Ake. Of course, we don't know the full situation regarding City's players' fitness at the moment, especially in the heart of defence. And Pep Guardiola's update yesterday in his pre-game press conference, it was extremely brief, if you call it brief at all. So, what I want, as I've just stated, is Angie Diaz, Guardiola. Okay, what I'm expecting is Walker, Diaz, Kanji, and Ake. Though it wouldn't shock me if Guardiola started. But the personnel won't fix the high line issues, which are caused by the midfield and the lack of a press up front. So in midfield, I'm expecting Gundogan to play at 6, as our number 6, because he's the only option and trusted option we have, especially given that Guardiola's trust of Gundogan, which he's earned over his illustrious career at the club last season when he was at Barcelona. Now, what I want to see is Mateus Nunes as playing alongside him, given his physical attributes. I think we'll need him, especially facing Alexi McAllister. I'll grab him back. And all Liverpool's options in midfield who face stronger and younger and fitter than ours. Put it bluntly. Technically, I think our players are probably better, but we lack the legs as it stands when you watch our games. So for two of the positions, I would hope to see Gundogan, Mateus Nunes, and with them, Kevin De Bruyne. Surely it's fit enough to start. Now, we all know De Bruyne's recent injury issues. He went off a half-time of our nil-all draw with Inter with a groin injury and then missed ten games as he recovered from the problem. When he came back, he was on the bench against Bournemouth. Should have this right. I was on the bench against Bournemouth, didn't play, came back against Sporting, played the final 10, 15 minutes, even though we're 4-1 down. Came on against Brighton, played against Spurs, and played again against Final. It was time for De Bruyne to start. I wrote about this earlier this week. If he would have had 5-6 weeks of full training, plus the substitute appearances. And as I mentioned, touched on with Rodri and Ruben Dias, Manchester City lack leaders, and De Bruyne is another one of those. He's a different type of leader, but he will likely be needed tomorrow. If De Bruyne is fully fit and can start, there's a flow-on effect which affects Haaland. It's a different topic. City need their leaders to play tomorrow. There's no other choice that matter for me. So, as it stands, I want and expect two different things, but I'm expecting in line Edison, Walker, Diaz, Kanji, and Ake, with a midfield of Gundogan, Nunes, and De Bruyne.
which leads into the front three. Now, this is another topic which is costing City as it stands. There's no other way to put it. As it stands, Erling Haaland is our only reliable goal scoring option. That's a flow-on effect from selling Julian Alvarez, who a lot of people, almost like the Twitter City Sport, didn't rate what Alvarez brought to our squad, basically. Which, fair enough, everyone has their own view. But we're paying the price for selling him in the summer to Atletico Madrid. As it stands, as I mentioned, to start the topic, Haaland is our only reliable goal threat. Phil Foden's woefully out of form. And has looked tired after a busy summer. And then that leads into our wings. Oscar Bobble, we've seen out to probably January with a fractured leg. So you can't factor him into this discussion. But yeah, I'd get back to Tommy, Jeremy Doppel, and Savinho. Prolific goal scorers haven't been excited in young leagues. They're more dribblers, they create crosses, and then all their dribbling creates options. So you're losing a goal scoring threat from out wide with those two. That's not a knock on them. They're both young players and they may learn to become goal scorers or develop talent. As we've seen, Phil Foden generally can, more often than does more often than not start. Drifts centrally. That's where his goal threat comes from. But this season, it's not his factors behind it. His form's dropped after his brilliant season last season. He was tired after playing for England throughout the summer. And then he had illness, injury that affected his start of the season. Foden almost looks there, but he's not the Phil Foden we all know. That's one other factor on top of Savinho and Doku's lack of a goal threat at this stage. The other one is the Oscar player on the wings. Jack Grealish, for me, alters this to a rating of the player. He's more of a, he controls possession. He takes the tempo, tracks back, plays more of a pre-assist, all his shots just get blocked. He's not a prolific goal scorer, nor is he a massive provider of assists, not in his style at City anyway. So he's not, barring some miracle change in Grealish's game, he's not going to add goals tomorrow. He is what he is. I think he's a great player, but a lot of people disagree, but we'll leave that one there. Same situation for Bernardo. He starts on the right, and he doesn't provide a goal threat. He is what he is in a different way to Grealish. We all know Bernardo's strengths. But that's another problem. Tomorrow, facing Liverpool at Anfield, back to the topic at hand, we're going to need more than just Erling Haaland or bust. That's why I expect Nunes and De Bruyne to start coming off for a goal threat. I think Pep will play it safe and start Foden and Bernardo alongside Haaland, obviously, up front. But there is a merit to, say, Savinho starting, because I don't know if he's going to be ready. Really show off control. But we'll need to score goals at Anfield, so you've got to put who can provide those. And as I just mentioned, outside of Haaland, and Foden when he's fit in the corner. That's an issue that's hard to solve based on just a quick brief analysis of our squad and what we need to implement tomorrow and what's cost us over the past six games. But anyway, that's the first episode of another Manchester City podcast done. I'll be back tomorrow to have a more in-depth preview of tomorrow's match before the game kicks off, obviously. And then throughout the week, I'll start branching off looking at what city you're linked with, in who and what we're linked with in January, and how we can go about adding all those pieces to our squad. But anyway, that's the first episode of another Manchester City podcast completed, and thanks for listening, and we'll be back tomorrow to preview the Liverpool clash at Anfield. Thanks for your time.